Coming up on today's episode, we recap a bananas game one between the Jets and Avs, including the good, the bad, and the ugly of Winnipeg's series opening win.
Hello, everybody. Recording live from somewhere.
What's good and welcome to another episode of Skates and Plates on the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki. You can follow me on Twitter at Brandon_Rewicki or the podcast at Skates Plates Pod. All right. That's how you open the playoffs. What a game. I don't even know what's going on still. I don't know how to start the episode. We got horns going on in the background. Tyson's undefeated Casa remains there. Right? We can't even hear what's happening. And I don't know if anybody has their bearing straight. After, yes, that's right, a 7-6 game one victory for the Jets to open up their playoff run. One down, 15 more to go. And if they're going to be like that, defibrillators are, you might want to put some stock in defibrillators. Let's put it that way. CGOB's Tyson Rewicki here with us. Give us the mood, Tyson. You're downtown. You're not too far away from the rink. What's you can actually hear the mood of the city right now outside your place.
Yeah, there's a lot of people just going insane right now. Like yeah. The horns are honking, the people are screaming. Like, I mean, after a game like that, how can you not do? Like, I was on cleanup duty after the game. That's how insane it was. It was just messes going everywhere. This is playoff hockey. Like, this is the start of a potentially historic series between these two teams if the rest of the series is going to play out like game one did.
Yeah, I don't know that if we get four or five more of those, it's going to be an all-timer, let alone if it goes to seven. But it felt like three different games. Yeah. Like I just checked the clock right now. We're recording this pretty quickly after game one ended, and I thought it was 10:30. I thought the game started. I thought it was a 6.5 hour game. You know, it was like a Martin Scorsese gangster film. I thought I had to check the clock a couple of times. I actually don't know where to begin because it's one of those weird ones that it's like, how do you break it down? Because it was so chaotic, it was so manic, it was so roller coaster-ish. That it feels, I almost wonder how much of that is transferable over to game two. I will say this though, Tyson, and it's always, it's interesting how perspectives will differ and alter depending on which side you're on. You know, the Avalanche side versus the Winnipeg Jets side. There is no doubt the Jets, I would say, got lucky in this one. You know, you look at the Shaw totals, pretty heavily tilted towards the Avalanche favor there. Now, how much of that is the Jets being up three in the third period? You take your foot off the gas. That thing, I don't know. But the Avalanche, I thought the Avalanche were the better team for more of the game than the Winnipeg Jets were. So I do think there's an element of luck that played out in Winnipeg's favor here. But having said that as well, that's a back-breaking game to lose if you're Colorado, right? Like, it almost felt like, you know, and especially with how they started the game, here's our best shot, boys. Come and get it. Oh, the Jets got it. It might have been an 8 count, but the Jets got your best shot, and then they poured 7 past your leaky tendy. I wonder, you always don't want to get too ahead of yourself after one game in the playoffs because that's all we've seen so far. But I do wonder just how much of the mind game element is going to be playing in Colorado's head here. And Winnipeg's going, you can't beat us. Like you play like that and you can't win? What happens when we bring our A game there? I don't know if that's how you saw it, Tyson, but especially with the way the season series went during the regular season, you kind of wonder if I'm on the Avalanche side, it's like, what the hell is it going to take for us to beat this GD team in one game here, let alone 4 out of the next 6.
Well, and you kind of expected Colorado to come out like that after the last meeting between these two teams, right? Like Colorado had a lot to prove after the season series with the Jets, and you know, you just kind of stay the course and things ended up going your way in this game. Like one part that I feel like that's understated is that you get that game one at home checked off. Now you don't have any of that pressure going in throughout the rest of the series. You know, you there's a little bit kind of a, I don't want to say a black cloud, but the dark gray cloud where, you know, it was like the Jets can't win at home during the playoffs. And is
the white out curse.
Yeah, is it because you get too amped up? And, you know, I thought at times during that game that they were being a little bit too over-aggressive, trying to be too physical in their own end and in the ozone as well. And they just found a way to get through this game. And when a goalie like Georgiev is playing like that, it helps your cause out a little bit. And
wow.
And I wonder, you know, I would assume that he gets the game two start, but that leash is going to be really, really short, especially if Anonen is, you know, back to close to 100%. I think that that decision gets a little bit dicey. And if I'm the Jets, if Georgiev starting, if I'm Rick Bonus, the message to the team is let's get everything on net. Like, there is no, and I thought that in this game especially, there was a lot of times where they had chances and they didn't pull the trigger when they potentially could have. And on a goalie who's struggling like that, you want to throw as much rubber as you can on him. And so I think that maybe in game two, we start to see a little bit more of a pucks on net approach instead of the cycle game that was working for them at times. But, you know, like you said, you can break down, there's a lot of things to break down. But in a big picture sort of way of looking at it, there's too many moving parts going on right here. But it's just awesome to come away with a win in a game like that. You know, like it's devastating for Colorado.
Well, yeah. I mean, how many games are you going to score six on Connor Hellebuyck?
Yeah.
Like, will there be another one this playoffs? Will there be another one for another few seasons? And you lose that game, man. Like, that's... I do wonder how the Avs are going to bounce back from that. Not that they're, you know, a mentally weak team. Not that they're a Maple Leafs West in the making or anything like that. But, like, you just do wonder how, because it's like we couldn't have done anything differently, really, you know, in terms of the Skaters and how we played the game and attacked Winnipeg. And we still find a way to give up some chances. And then, you know, we'll get to the Georgiev thing in just a little bit there. But it's funny you say get through the game, Tyson. At the start of that one, when it was clear that Colorado had the gas pedal smashed through the car floor into the concrete, I was watching this with the family. I was like, the Jets got to get to the TV timeout. Like, find a way to get out of it without giving up a goal, because they were shell-shocked. They didn't have to worry about being too amped up, I thought, from the crowd. Because they just let Colorado skate all over them. And, I mean, it's wild to say this, but, you know, Hellebuyck holding down the fourth there and keeping it one zip through the first 6 or 7 minutes was pretty big. And then they get their one chance. They get onto the board there right after the TV timeout. I know puck. And at least they were able to stem the tide a little bit. And then I thought from that point on to the early portion of the third period, the Jets stabilized the game. I don't think they took over the game by any means. It was pretty back and forth from that point on. But at the very least, they weren't getting run out of the building, which they were through that first 5 or 6 minutes when the shots were 11-1. So, I mean, the start was horrendous. But sometimes that just happens where you're taking some punches. You got to find a way to just get through it. And then you can kind of refocus and go from there. So I did like the way the Jets got to it after that. But the other storyline for me, Tyson, I mean, one was obviously what I talked about earlier. How was Colorado going to react after playing their best game of the season against the Jets and still losing? But two, it's the Georgiev issue. I mean, we as Flyers fans, we know bad goaltending when we see it. And we know how that can sink playoff series very quickly. That's bad goaltending. The Jets... Hey, they did capitalize on some good chances that they set up. That was bad goaltending. And I don't know how you just flip the switch and turn it around. To me, it's very different from the Vegas game one win last year, where the Jets really played a dominant, strong 60 minutes in that one. And I think they only won by one or two goals, if I'm not mistaken. It was like 3-1 or 3-2 or something like that. this was a goaltender who, right from the first shot of the game, was basically praying the puck wouldn't come within 5 feet of him. Like, I you don't turn it around, in my opinion, you don't turn that around very quickly here. It's going to be fascinating to see what Bednar does with that Anadin kid, who played pretty good in the regular season. I mean, at most, you can only give Georgiev another period. Like, if he stinks it up in the first and the Jets pot two quick ones, you got to go curtains on him quickly and get somebody else in there. Oh, yeah. But that I don't know how you can't ignore that, both from both Winnipeg and Colorado's perspective. Like you said, Tice, Bones and the coaching staff, it's like, yeah, anything towards the net, we're A-okay with. And with Colorado, it's like, oh my gosh, we might have to pot four a game if we have any hope in this series.
Well, and I think that you saw that in game one is with Colorado's transition, was that it was as soon as they had the opportunity to move the puck up the ice, it was let's move this puck as far as possible away from our defensive zone. And I think that's going to play a huge role into the team's psyche for the rest of the series of Georgiev, as long as Georgiev's in the game. Because as a decor, you're in the back of your mind, you're thinking we can't give up anything. And the one thing that Colorado does really good is can attack on the transition. So their transition game may take a hit because they're trying to focus on preventing shots and chances from getting towards Georgiev. And, you know, you take away one of the Avalanche's greatest strains. I think like the amount of people who weren't taking the Georgiev, not this, I think a lot of people in Winnipeg were kind of salivating at the chance of facing Georgiev, but I think like nationwide and kind of like the national media didn't totally take into account that Georgiev's not that good. And
this year,
when he gets into the, I mean, he looks shaky. He looks so shaky. And this just gives the Jets a bunch of confidence now too. And I'm so interested to see just exactly how long he lasts come game two, come game three. I mean, who knows? Maybe he pulls out like a Samsonov performance when he was down in the minors, then comes up and plays lights out for a long stretch of period there. So goalies are voodoo. So you can never really pinpoint exactly what's going to happen game to game, but it looks really good going forward for the Jets facing Georgiev.
Goalies are voodoo, and I'm the voodoo doctor, Tyson. And the doctor says we're not getting the shutout performance in game two. I will be stunned if he keeps the Jets to under three if he gets the call. I don't think it's a panic move to look towards Anadin pretty early. Like, I don't know. I look back to that. I don't think it's as crazy. I don't think it will be. It could be. I don't think it will be as crazy as that Flyers-Penguins series a few years back where every game was 7-6. But he reminded me a lot of Fleury in that series where it was basically there's a magnet in the net. And the puck, as long as it gets somewhere near there, we're going to find a way to make it work. So
it's funny you said that because I actually thought that, this game one's a little similar to that series back in 2012. But, you know, like there's with some voodoo dolls, you take the little pin needle and you stick it in the doll. Whoever's using Georgiev's dolls is throwing little mini pucks past them constantly. And there's nothing you can do to stop it.
I keep trying to poke the Georgiev doll, but it just goes past him every time. past him. How did you think Hellebuck played? 6 goals against?
I mean...
I didn't think he was that bad.
Me either. I thought the third goal was pretty weak. I think
the McKinnon goal, right?
Yeah, I think that's one he's definitely like to have back. But other than that, there's a lot of weird bounces, a lot of, you know, kind of broken plays there. And I do think that's something that Colorado was really trying to focus on, especially in game one, was getting pucks towards the net and thinking that they can win those net front battles. I thought that was kind of their main focus in the O zone, but Hellebuck shut the door. And even in the first period, he made that huge glove save on Manson that really kind of, I thought that took the wind out of their sails a little bit there in the first period for Colorado. And then the Jets come down a couple minutes later and score. Obviously, you don't want to let in 6 goals ever, but for Connor Hellebuck, like you said, he probably won't let 6 goals in the rest of the playoffs, knock on wood. So,
you mean he's not going to give up 6 the rest of the postseason run?
Yeah, he's
going to have like a .990 save percentage by the end. He'll give up 5 goals in the next 4-3.
Just the most historical run of all time. But no, I thought he played solid. And you know, come game two, I expect that same high level of play and just less bounces and broken plays going the Avalanche way. And so,
yeah, I mean, it's weird because he made 40 saves, which is a lot. I mean, and this is the issue too, though, Tyson. I do agree. I mean, like the Dylan or the Avalanche goal, the sixth one goes off the back of Dylan and rolls in. Like, that's a freak one. You had a few point shots that either found their way through clean or were deflections.
Sandberg turns it over right in front of his net.
That's also not ideal defensively. But those things also tend to happen when you give up 46 shots. You know what yeah. I mean? And I think 73 attempts in the game. So I agree with what you're saying there, but there also needs to be a major, major wake-up call for the Jets going into game two that, you know, hey, it's great we scored seven. It's unexcusable that we allowed 46 shots to hit our goaltender in that game. And so that's got to be the main focus going into game two on Tuesday night. Let's talk about some of the individual or line pairing performances in the game, Tyson. And again, it is hard. It's hard to figure it out because the game was so wacky. You know, the top line, I thought, sure, they lost the shot share battle. The entire team did. You can't even really go that route because everybody was caved in, essentially. But I did like what I saw out of the group, the Scheifele, Vilardi, Connor. Connor was 50 times more engaged than he was at any point during the regular season. Vilardi continues to be a beast down low and in and around the net. That play to get Scheifele the goal there, I mean, it's high-end stuff in and around the net there.
That was great forecheck by Connor, too.
Connor sets it up. Vilardi, great pass. And if he gets Scheifele the puck in and around there, it's in the back of the net. I thought it was a pretty promising performance from that line. I thought the second line was good. Good-ish. You know, Lowry's line, it's going to be tough for him, man, to go up against Nathan MacKinnon. And, and that was the hard matchup in that one. But I think they showed themselves pretty well.
Well, and I still think Nino's just getting his legs under him, too. Like that, I don't think he was 100% in that game. He just didn't look like exactly Nino, and that's understandable after getting a cut like that to your leg. So, I mean, I do think that he's going to kind of steady things out a little bit too. But I mean, that line is doing exactly what it needed to do, and you saw it from the first shift. And it could be a bad thing sometimes, like when some of the high end guys, like you always hear the stories about Michael Jordan and Kobe. But when you piss off a really good player, that he could make them really good. But you might as well piss them off instead of just letting them coast through the series, right? Like, and that's what he did. I remember with that hit in the corner where MacKinnon's already throwing his arms up after Lowry hits him square in the chest. Like that's exactly like, and we've seen it with McDavid and Draisaitl too. Like that's the kind of physical force that you have to put on those top guys.
Yeah. I don't think that this is I don't think MacKinnon and Rantanen are like Bufflin, where the opposition would be like, don't go near him. Just leave him alone and we don't turn him into the Hulk, right? I think MacKinnon and Rantanen are tuned in enough that you might as well just try your best to get him off their game if it's even possible. And it's pretty wild that I didn't even think they played their best game. And you end up with 2 points for each of them. And you're like, we played them pretty well. So I think it's just overall the main thing from the forward group and the team as a whole is just that structurally they have to be a lot better. I think there was a bit of a wake-up call with how fast Colorado played in that game, that this is a different team than they faced during the regular season. And they're going to need to ante up the effort big time in game two. I think that's the main thing there. And, you know, it's kind of a nice thing, even though it sucked last year, but to win game one against Vegas last year and then drop four straight should be the perfect wake-up call here that, hey, just because we took game one, we know it means less than nothing. And we need to, I mean, it's the perfect kind of game where you can, like if you're Bones, you can go in on them hard because you won. And it's easier to get the message across, I think, after games like that. So a bit of a weird one. But I think there were some promising signs from the forward group. I think for me, specifically, the top line did what you were hoping for them to do, is that, hey, you lose the shot share battle, at least get some goals on the board. And they did exactly that. On the blue line, I think it was pretty simple. Morrissey, DeMello were great. Everybody else, not so much. And, well, I guess you tell me. I don't think you change the lineup after a win. But the Samberg-Stanley pair, whew, that was a rough, rough 60 minutes for those two. I didn't like Neil Pionk's game all that much either, but I don't anticipate anything to change in the top four. But, man, they were pushing the you don't change a winning lineup after a victory sort of a mantra there, because it was rough for people. Will get on Stanley, obviously, because he, you know, bit of a lightning rod. But that might have been Sandberg's worst game of the season as well.
Yeah, no, I think you throw that logic out the window after that game, because they both looked like they couldn't handle any pressure. I mean, there's no puck mover on that D pair. And I think that really hurts them. It's that they're both not the most adept puck movers, and they just, with that, when the speed ramps up a little bit, it's just hard for them to move the puck out there. And I think that we've seen guys, you bring in a guy like Nate Schmidt and Colin Miller, who are both, you know, they played in the playoffs, they're veterans. I think that can add a more steadying presence to this team right now. And I love Dylan Sandberg. Like, I'm one of Dylan Sandberg's biggest fans, but after watching that game, knowing that you have the chance to go up 2-0 and then heading into Colorado, like, I think that you really do have to look at that decor and say, hey, maybe we should go with them a little bit more of a steadying presence, because those two guys did nothing to instill confidence in me going into game two.
Yeah, steady was not what we saw out of that pair there. But I also do like, and again, you can have a little bit of leeway because you win the game. I also do like, hey, we acknowledge that was by far and away not your best outing that we've seen out of you. Show us what you got in game two, right? Like, kind of go back to them a little bit. Hey, we believe in you. We got confidence. Let's see what you got here and try to turn it around. And maybe the nerves calmed down a little bit because they were struggling with the speed and the tenacity of the Avalanche forecheck. I don't mind going back to both of them there and seeing. Let's see what the response is like.
The only thing
that the next game is a throwaway, but you know what? Maybe some young guys can give you a little bit more of an elevated performance. And you've got Schmidt and Miller in your back pocket.
The one thing with Stanley in that regard is just that when he's at his best, he's being a physical presence. And he's not the fastest guy. So when the speed ramps up a little bit, I just kept on finding himself chasing hits there and putting himself out of position and putting it. The rest of his line mates who are out there in tougher positions too. And so that's what worries me, is where he's trying to do what he does best to be an effective player. But right now, with the way that the game's going, it's just not that player's not needed right now. You know what I mean?
And the other part of it too, and I don't know how much this played into their struggles, but Sandberg and Schmidt have been outstanding as a third pair this year. They also played 60 some odd games together.
Yeah.
Sandberg, Stanley, what, the past 2 weeks? The last 2 weeks of the season? Right? Like, I could actually understand the coaching staff being like, let's give Sandberg a bit of a, you know, a comfort blanket here. We'll put Nate Schmidt with them. They've shown well. And that's our third pair for game two. Right? So, yeah, I don't know. I don't think they'll change anything. But there's no doubt Sandberg's got to be miles better. Had a bit of a rough postseason last year too, so hopefully he can get his head straight and have himself a nice game too. But that was probably the biggest worry that the team had, I thought. And I think it was shown in the ice time as well, where, you know, Sandberg gets 12 minutes, Stanley gets 10.
Yeah, no, the one on the D pairs that I wanted to mention was just the kind of the deployment use, where Morrissey and DeMello were getting a fair amount of starts against the MacKinnon line, obviously. And that means that they're out there with the Lowry line. And Garrett Hull had mentioned this when we had him on the pod a couple, I think it was 2 weeks ago, but besides the point. Morrissey and DeMello weren't on the ice too often with the Scheifele line. But when they were, like, you could really see, that was when I thought that the top line had their best shifts in the O zone. So, you know, like, if you were Bonus, how do you play that? Do you take the defensive side of it into account and putting, hey, we want to just have you guys shut them down? Or do you take I mean, that way you can try and put them in spots where, you know, like if an icing comes and you can pop them out there with the top line in the ozone, you do it. But, you know, it's kind of a fine line between which side you want to kind of put those guys on.
I know what you mean, but for me, it's not a decision right now. It's Morrissey, DeMelo. MacKinnon jumps over the boards. Morrissey, DeMelo jump over the boards. It's that simple right now. Especially, I think, too, with how bad Georgiev is at the moment, that you could probably sacrifice a little bit of offense, knowing that, you know, if we can slow down MacKinnon, keep that to a goal a game, that line, we're going to feel pretty good about outscoring them. But we don't have to stack up Morrissey with, you know, either the Scheifele line or the Ehlers line. I do get what you're saying. But to me, it's a little bit of that, and it's a little bit of, do you really trust any of the other D pairs to go up against MacKinnon's line?
No, I don't.
There we go. So I think it's almost like process by elimination there. Yeah, I think we'll stick with Morrissey DeBello against MacKinnon for the time being. And, you know, but I do think, like, in that in your question there, if they played against Dallas, for example, that's where I might look towards having Scheifele and Morrissey out there at the same, like the top line and the top pairing out there together. I'd be looking more so towards that against a deeper team like Dallas, as opposed to what we see with the Avalanche here, because the Jets did find a way to take advantage. I know Georgiev wasn't good, but they did take advantage of going up against the second, the third, the fourth lines of the Avalanche. You could see that, you know, it's going to be difficult for them to slow down Winnipeg's much more balanced attack. But yeah, it's a crazy game. It's a crazy game. It's a wild one. And I think fortunately, too, that the Jets were able to skate away with that victory. Now they head into game two Tuesday night. One more. Take two. Head to Denver with a pretty pretty sizable lead. What do we need to see differently? And what do we need to see the same from the Jets going into that one, Tyson? For me, it's pretty simple. Pucks on net, pucks on net, pucks on net, pucks on net. But I do also think there needs to be a pretty sizable refocus back to structured hockey. I think too often it was a little too pawn hockey for my liking, a little too wide open. You give the Avalanche time to move up the ice and gain some speed, and it's going to be a long night for you. So I think focusing on, first and foremost, stymieing the Avalanche attack into the zone is going to be a big, big part of playing a much more repeatable, solid game against Colorado, knowing that you've got a struggling goaltender behind them.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, I agree with you 100%, and I've been watching a lot of Rock'em Sock'ems to get ready for the playoffs, and Don Cherry has a quote where he says, "Doesn't matter how hard you shoot it or where you shoot it, it's about getting it on net." And so I'm going to call this the Don Cherry combo. It's getting everything on net, doesn't matter how, doesn't matter where, and tightening up in the neutral zone and D zone. I think, and it's you got to play simpler hockey. It's kind of weird how you can win a game 7-6 and then be like, hey, let's just go back to the basics sort of thing.
Let's tone it down a little bit here. We don't need. Yeah, I thought it was a little too run and gun, right? Yeah. So I think not even necessarily parking the bus per se, but just let's worry about defensive stuff first. And when we get our chances, there's a decent opportunity for us to put three or four past Georgiev and do so pretty quickly. So it'll be interesting to see, Tyson, because look, if the Jets do play that more structured game, it's a little more quiet and they come out with a victory. Obviously, fans are going to be feeling great. If we get a repeat of game one and Colorado picks up the win this time around, it's pretty wild how quickly things can shift here. But like I said earlier, I do think it's beneficial for the team to look back to last year and see game one win means nilch, absolutely nothing. And so there's got to be a pretty concerted effort to choke out the Avalanche as opposed to blitz and outscore them in this one. So I'm hoping for, you know, a much more playoff-like performance by the team something a la, you know, 3-1, 22 shots against. Helipic has a bit of an easier night in this one. But we'll see. Either way, though, vibes are high in the city, and the whiteout curse is over. Let's see if we can make it back-to-back wins to start off the Jets' postseason run. We'll obviously get back to that next one Tuesday night. Wednesday morning will be the next episode. We'll see where the Jets stand after that. Quickly, Tyson, we got just a couple minutes here. What is it, four or five game ones throughout the postseason so far? How about this? Is there a prediction you would like to take back after seeing just a single game of postseason action through the various East and West series we've got so far?
Tampa.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yikes.
That was a swing and a miss.
Yeah, Florida is going to annihilate them. But the one I still feel good about the Capitals pick, surprisingly.
Like to push the Rangers?
Yeah, because I honestly didn't think they played that bad today against them.
No, they just they ran into the Empire State Building. It's that simple. You all laughed when I put 50 on Rempe Conn Smythe. Well, it's not so funny
first
now.
Goal score.
I can't even imagine what first goal score is paid. I mean, I know that the Caps are already good, but I didn't pick them to go 7 just because it's hockey's weird that way. I was going to say, I might want to do over on that one too.
But. Yeah, I'm also not feeling great about my Leafs to go to the finals after game one, but hey, it's the Leafs. You never know.
Like I said last, they lost 6-0 to Tampa last year and they won 4-5. So yeah, you never know what you're going to get with the Maple Leafs. I'm pretty excited though to watch this Canucks-Preds game. I think that's going to be right up there. I think we've established Jets-Avs, Bruins-Leafs. I guess Stars Knights will be pretty sexy starting on Monday.
What's up with both the Oilers, Kings, and Knights and Stars getting the extra day off?
How come I don't like it. I don't like it.
They didn't have a game on Saturday.
That's a fair point, Tyson. I mean, probably to give Mark Stone's spleen an extra day of rest and recovery before he circumvents the line. I mean, gets back into the lineup.
Oh, and Petrangelo has an emergency appendectomy too. And then it's like, well, we'll give him another day.
Just shocked he didn't schedule that for the trade deadline. So they could have.
Yeah.
God knows who they could have brought in with that.
Get a couple setbacks. You know, it's just not ready yet.
He's that damn appendix, all right? Like it's
back.
We want him to go in, but we just can't. That'll be a fascinating series. Potential round two matchup for the Jets, Knights and Stars, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. Still plenty of room and time to go in Jets Avs, even though Winnipeg comes up victorious in that game one matchup. But that'll do it for us in this episode here today. And like we said, we'll get back at it to recap game two following Tuesday night's matchup. So check that one out sometime Wednesday morning. Until then, though, thank you guys so much for tuning in to another episode of Skates and Plates here on the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki, CJOB's Tyson Rewicki with us once again. Like I said, we're back at it recapping Jets Avs game two for you guys on Wednesday morning. Until then, though, enjoy the victory, enjoy the whiteout, enjoy the next couple of days, and we'll talk to you Wednesday. Peace.